It's Will Sean Podcast. The internet cried out for two more blowhards, and they courageously answered that call. Armed with the weapon of wit, each week they're joined by guests to discuss movies, television, pop culture, and anything else that's pissing them off. Take it away, boys.
I'm Will Link.
And I'm Sean David.
And this is Will Sean Podcast? Only with frequent interruptions to eulogize the recently departed.
How you doing, Will?
So, a friend of mine had a birthday party this weekend.
Everyone had a birthday party this weekend.
And I could not attend because, and I feel like this is an excuse that would only fly in Los Angeles, I was helping someone with a shot-by-shot remake of the opening credit sequence to the show Friends.
Were you behind the camera or in front of the camera?
They asked me to be in it, despite my inability to act. they thought that I would... they wanted to show that anyone can do this. It's a long story. So for some reason, I was cast as Joey.
You're very much a Joey type.
Yeah, I always thought I was a Chandler type.
So when do we get to see this?
Could I be any more Chandler?
You know what? I didn't really watch Friends, so I
guess
it was a joke.
You don't even know who these people are, do you?
I have a vague notion that he had a sitcom for a while, didn't he, Joey? He lived
Joey,
in L.A.
Yeah.
He had wacky neighbors.
Exactly. That's the version I was playing.
Okay.
Later years,
so
Joey.
When do we get to see this brilliant piece of cultural pastiche?
Believe me, the second you're able to, I'll plug it on the podcast.
Don't worry, Will. I'll be there for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you're there for me, too. What's going on in the world of Will Sean Podcast?
Busy, busy, busy. Couple things. First, any new listeners, welcome to the show. Keep those Facebook likes coming. Subscribe on iTunes. Star rating. If you're feeling generous and have more than, I don't know, a second, write us a note. It helps other people find the show.
Star rate us. It helps.
Good star rate us. Don't just fucking one star us.
If you're going to give us one star, just move on.
Don't be a Dafkanik, as they say. A lot of things going on. First of all, Alex Stein has a book release party for his book, No Mr. Bond, I Expect Your Dreams to Die.
Yes.
That will be on September 29th at 7 p.m. at the Fake Gallery, which is on Melrose.
Nothing else is going on that night.
Nothing else. Second, L.A. Storyworks, run by Michael Patrick Duggan.
Yes.
It's having essentially a storytelling festival. So if you wanted an entire weekend, long weekend, of storytelling shows, that will run from October 4th to the 10th, and the website is lastoryworks.org. Buy a festival pass, go see some shows, put a little culture in your ears. And Shriekfest, run by Denise Gossett, October 3rd through the 6th in Los Angeles, and it is their 13th annual Shriekfest. This will be a good one.
Oh, spooky.
Very. And lastly, Jackson Truax is going to have a version of the Fet show called Turning Over a New Leaf, where acts are limited to 5 minutes.
Which is why I can no longer perform at the Fet. I need 10.
You know, for those of you who want a variety show but suffer from ADD, we have this now. So that will be on October 5th at the Michael Woodson Studios, right on the corner of Cascio and Robertson at 8 p.m. So I'm sure you've written that all down. Your calendar's full. Go to it, people.
You notice all our former guests decided to have things all on the same weekend? I wonder if there's something conspiratorial about it.
Very.
And who is our sponsor? You know what? Real quick, I wanted to throw in a shout-out to our youngest listener.
Uh-oh.
Calvin Corkery, the unborn child of listener Sean Corkery. I was talking to him last week, and he said that his pregnant wife, Becky, they listen to the podcast, and the baby listens. Like, it's in her stomach.
In
listening.
Utero. So this is, you know how they say playing Bach for an unborn child makes them come out smarter? I'm sorry, poor Calvin, but you're going to be a dumb child. I apologize for that.
He's listening.
No, blame your parents. They're shitty parents. Even though your dad's name's Sean.
And, okay, so now, who is our sponsor this week?
Well, Will. Fingerprint technology is everywhere these days. It's cropping up in every corner of our lives, except the place where it matters the most, the bedroom. Presenting biometric secure chastity belts featuring patented finger cuffs technology. Never again will you have to worry about what your spouse or significant other is doing while you're away, because their private parts will literally only respond to your touch. Available for both men and women.
That's quite a sponsor this week.
It's a complicated world out there, and you gotta keep an eye on.
On the show this week, the Emmys happened, and I'm pissed off about a lot of things, so I'm going to go crazy on that. The greatest closer in the history of baseball is retiring. I have some words to say about that
You'll
as well.
You'll have to explain what a closer is, because it's bullshit.
And you mentioned September 29th, and there's a lot happening that day, and the enemy is going to involve that date. But first, we're very excited to have with us today, he is a writer, a performer, and a doer of good.
Well done, research.
Sterling Gardner.
How are you, man? Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming by.
Yeah.
What is the good you're doing?
You know, I put that on there because I mock so many people and things in general, like in social media, but I do actually do some like good things in the world, volunteer work, and occasionally I'll post something that's inspirational, and I call that my 1 in 20, because I usually put up 19 horribly offensive posts.
I like it.
And then occasionally I'll stick something in there, and then people are like, whoa, wasn't expecting that
from
you.
Hey, that's 5%. If everyone in this country did 5% of what they expected of them, we'd be in a much better
place. Amen, amen. I believe in doing good things, but I don't also believe in making a show about it. You know what I mean? Some people like want you to know all the good shit you're doing.
No. So you wouldn't necessarily...
I try to fly under the radar with my...
Yeah, I don't trust those people.
With my stuff. Yeah, it's too much.
You wouldn't necessarily have the donate money to the hospital wing in your name. You would put it anonymous.
It depends on the hospital.
I think once you get into hospital wing level, you'd want to... You know, quick, take this patient to the anonymous wing.
I volunteer, speaking of hospital, I do volunteer, and here I am fucking promoting this shit.
Right off the bat.
Right off the bat, right. No, but it's, because I'll tell you why I did it, because I was terrified of babies, like I've always been terrified of babies. So I volunteer and I cuddle premature drug-addicted babies at this hospital downtown. Yeah, because I needed to get over my fear, and I figured that was a good way to do it.
Has it worked?
Yeah, I feel comfortable handling a baby. I mean, I don't have any babies to handle, but I thought, man, if I ever had one, I'd be fucked.
Especially if they were premature and drug-addicted.
Yeah, now I could even handle that.
So, Sterling, first off, we always like to get a little bit of the origin story.
Okay.
Now, we're here in Los Angeles, but you're not from Los Angeles.
I'm from the Maryland, Virginia... The Delmarva Peninsula is what it's called, actually.
Is that the Beltway area?
It's 20 miles south of D.C. in a little redneck town called Waldorf, Maryland.
Did you spend a lot of time in D.C.?
No. I spent a lot of time crabbing with friends and drinking. We had drive-through liquor stores and had friends that worked there. And
that sounds fantastic.
Service through the car. It was crazy is what it is. You could get a bottle of liquor served to you in your car... At 16, because we'd have our 16-year-old friends working there for the summer. It was dangerous is what it was. Fun as hell and super dangerous.
Sounds like great youth.
But you still live in Maryland, so...
Yep.
I'm sorry.
There's that. Yep.
Well, then at what point did you say...
Had enough drive-through liquor stores and grabbing.
And decide, I'm gonna go somewhere else. I'm going to come, I guess, here to L.A. Or was there a stop in between? Or
no, I thought I was going to go to business school, and then I took accounting. And that thwarted all, that just was ground everything to a halt.
You realize you never learned to add.
Here's the thing, I'm like crazy good at math. Crazy good at math. Accounting has nothing to do with math.
It's all spreadsheets and filling out forms.
It's theory. Yeah. It's a lot of theory. And so I was like, well, fuck, I'm kind of fucked now. So, and then in college, and my dad sang, so I actually started out doing musicals, which I know is...
Interesting.
Sounds corny, but... so I did musicals and then did straight plays, and I did more and more of those in college. And then by the time I was a senior, I was taking economics as my major. I was like, that sounds like a horrible life. But I was having fun doing the theater stuff. And then there was two choices, New York or L.A. I grew up really, really rural area, and New York was just completely fucking overwhelming.
Oh, it was... Okay.
Just...
It's a lot.
Geographically, it was just way too much for me. And... So I came here. I mean, I love it here. I love the weather, and I've been here since college.
Yeah, I'm from New York, and I always feel a little guilty saying how much... I've been out here 8 years now. I always feel guilty saying how much I love it out here, but it's great. It's a great
city.
Well,
I'm from here, and I was in New York recently, and while that town has its charms, frankly, I prefer Los Angeles.
Depends on what you're into.
It is, but I'm into L.A.
Yeah, me too.
The plus is we're all in a place where there's a lot of different things to do and a lot of different things to explore and a lot of different arts to pursue.
And a lot of nice weather.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
End of story, really.
You know what? The nice weather makes up for the fact that, okay, maybe they stopped serving me alcohol at 2 a.m., but you know what? That's probably a good thing.
Because I was in Manhattan.
I was in Manhattan, and I went out with my friend in the Upper West Side, and we're drinking, and they just serve you drinks until you die. Yeah. And that's it. And there's no last call. They just keep filling jars of artisan whatever.
The now you came out here, and according to your bio that I was reading,
wow.
You booked a shitload of commercials.
I've done a shitload of commercials. Did I actually write that in
you
my
did
bio?
Right. I put it in quotes here.
I'm very casual, I guess. you know, I did the most annoying commercial I've done that people remember is
Have you remember
Dr. Scholl's? Are you gelling? Oh, you know I'm gelling.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah,
that's
gelling
me, baby.
With Magellan.
Gelling with Magellan.
Were you the gelling with Magellan guy?
I was the husband to a woman, and we were getting married. And then my buddies were asking if we were gelling. I mean, it's just, the commercial doesn't even make sense. It's just a bunch of dudes standing around going, are you gelling? You know I'm gelling, dude. I'm gelling.
Now, how many takes, how many times did you have to say that fucking word?
First off, it was the coolest shoot I've ever done because they took us to Rio to shoot that.
Rio de Janeiro?
Yeah.
Really?
Because the production company was doing two commercials.
Yeah.
One was a copper tone commercial with Brazilian models on the beach.
Okay.
And ours, which they could have shot in the backyard in Van Nuys. But it was actually cheaper for them to fly us down and knock out both commercials with Brazilian crew. So we got a 9-day first class trip.
Why are we not doing commercials?
Oh, it was the greatest.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Scholl's.
9 days?
Dude, it was one of those commercials or situations where you hear other people talking about it and you're like, fuck you, man. That is way too cool.
Did you get paid well?
Yes.
Fuck
and
you.
It's one of those they split into like four different annoying commercials.
Right.
Yeah, it was.
It was sweet.
It was sweet.
Did they give you the free Dr. Scholl's?
No. Oh, but they were making us ad-lib at first, too. First, like, there's only so many, and they wanted it to rhyme with gelling. So, like, I know that's what I'm saying. Like,
are you a felon? I'm gelling when I'm running from the
I walked out with my wife, and it's the only one that made them laugh, and then they didn't use it. Because they never use it. They don't want you to really improvise. They want you to use their line. And I was like, watch it, guys. She's already yelling. And, you know, you could hear the people in the tent laugh. And I was like, oh, maybe they'll use that. Nope, they just used all this straight-up shit.
Didn't test well.
It didn't test well. The funny thing was...
Dr. Scholl did not like it.
The next commercial I showed up on the set to shoot was like a Honda or something. Six months, a year, whatever it was. And I'm in line, and it's raining, so everybody's covered up. There's no way these guys knew it was me. And we're just in line, and the two crew members look at each other and they go, are you gelling? And the guy goes, you know I'm gelling. As opposed to, how are you chilling? And I was like, wow, that's fucking weird.
Wow.
And and annoying people in my gym walking up to me asking if I'm gelling.
Like,
it got to be really fucking annoying.
Well, that's, you know what's so funny about that commercial? Because it's such a stupid commercial.
We've got to post a link to it on the website.
I have it online.
I'll never forget that commercial.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things you don't think about, but then, like, if someone ever says it, I remember that entire ad campaign.
Yeah.
Wow. Do you still do commercials? You still get
any? Yes and no. I mean, I don't, like, aggressively go... That sounds crazy that I don't aggressively go after commercials. But I go on calls here and there, but I got kind of fried.
Well, you really seem to find, though... So you're out here, you're doing commercials, you're loving life in L.A., but you really seem to find that you're a good storyteller.
I think that's sort of my thing, my niche, as it were. I started out... solely acting, and then I wrote a one-man show. I'd never written anything in my life, and performed that, and I got all these writing agents that were like, we love the writing, what else do you have? And I'm like, I don't have anything, I'm a fucking actor.
Yeah. But was there a lot of acting in the one-man show? Was it very
Me on stage for 40 minutes telling, acting out the stories that I'm telling.
Got it.
And I got a lot of great stuff came from it, and Warner Brothers wanted to develop it into a TV show. It never ended up being a TV show, but I didn't have anything else. I was like, I want to be a fucking actor. I don't have any other scripts. And I dated a few writers, and they were all like, you have great stories. You need to keep writing. I don't want to write. And then I found Sit and Spin, which is one of the longest running storytelling shows. And when I went to see that, I was like, ooh,
I think I could do this really well.
That's kind of what I discovered when I saw the Pez show, and we had booked Alex Alexander to be on this podcast. And this is only a little over a year ago. And I was a screenwriter, and I guess I still am, but I didn't even realize this was a thing, that there were all these shows. And I feel like, I think kind of the same with you, I feel like I've discovered something I'm good at, that my writing is suited for, that my voice is suited for.
Yeah, I was like, oh, man, I think I hit it. And then at the same time, I was discovering Sedaris, and my mom was sending me his books.
Have you listened to Sedaris' audio tapes, though?
I've listened to audio tapes, and I've seen him read three times.
Yes. He's a man. I mean, he is so good at it. And the way he reads his stories, that's kind of like the voice I have in my head when I'm trying to write.
I went to a show and gave him, because you can, he'll sign.
Oh, yeah, I know.
And I gave him a CD with my stories on it, and he sent me a fucking postcard quoting his favorite lines from my fucking CD. And that, I, of course, I have that. I mean, that's like the prize. That's my prize possession.
I don't want to waste time getting into it because we've kind of told it on there before, but I have a David Sedaris postcard story that I'll have to share with you when we are.
Yeah. When I went to go see him at Royce Hall and then got a signature on Me Talk Pretty one day, I told him how I almost got kicked out of a Barnes & Noble for laughing so hard at the Santa Land Diaries.
That's hilarious.
And so he drew a little picture on there. He wrote, "Don't get kicked out." And then he offered me some of his dessert because he didn't want it. So I broke bread with David Sedaris.
Sorry to go back to this. And I was like, oh, well, David Sedaris is making money doing this. And that was like, and still remains to be this weird carrot of like, man, if I could figure out how to do what he's doing, that would literally be my dream come true.
Well, that's kind of where I'm at. I mean, I've talked to other people who've gotten some writing work and stuff off of doing stuff like this. Yeah. So I think it's a possible way to achieve this goal.
So towards that end, you wrote your first collection of stories.
Well, a publisher came to Sit and Spin and to Maggie, who was producing it, and said, we would like to put a collection of these together. So yeah, I got published in a collection of short stories called Dirty Laundry that they couldn't officially affiliate with Sit and Spin, I think because of the Comedy Central, but it's everyone that was a part of the Sit and Spin community. Not everyone, but like 20 of us have stories in there. And then that publisher, here's a great story, that publisher put out our book. It was out for 1 month, and the publisher literally bet the farm on Peter Bogdanovich.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, that's always a good bet.
Yeah.
Yeah, like that horse.
Like, all in on Bogdanovich. Is that his name? Bogdanovich?
Yeah, Bogdanovich.
Bogdanovich. Tanked. Closed their doors in like 3 weeks. Like, that book made no money, and they literally shut down shop.
Peter Bogdanovich hasn't done anything of value since the 70s.
No. Then it's not Bogdanovich. It's the Chicago senator who tried to sell his Senate seat. What is his name?
Blagojevich.
Yes. One of those bitches. Yes, they bet the farm on him, dude. They bet the farm on that guy. Like, what? Nobody's all in on that guy.
No, nobody should ever be all in on that guy.
I think we just have
so there's a couple copies floating around, but yeah.
But then you put out a CD of stories.
I put out a comedy.
My Sexual Bell Curve.
Yep. The good, the bad, and the ugly all in there. Yeah, and it's gotten some really nice reviews, and I put it out there myself. Like, I self-published it.
Now, were they recordings from live performances?
Yes, all live shows. And I was very pleasantly surprised at the number of sales it's gotten. Like, I didn't do any kind of promotion or anything. It's just, you know, friends and word of mouth. And, like, sometimes I'll get really random people that are like, hey, man, I downloaded your thing. It's hilarious. I'm like, wow, that's like the power of social media. It's really cool.
You send a copy to Peter Bogdanovich.
He'll go, what the fuck is going on?
Now, before we get to some of our pop culture topics of the week, we have to talk that you have written a book. It's called An Open Apology to All My Ex-Girlfriends, Volume 1.
Volume 1.
Now, I saw you, and this was one of the reasons I wanted to have you on. I saw you perform a story from it at Tattletales here in Los Angeles. It was very funny.
Thanks, man.
I mean, the title is kind of self-explanatory, but why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
It is an epistolary, which I didn't even know what that word meant.
Because you never read the Bible as a child.
That's correct. It's a book of letters. It's an epistolary. It's a book of letters to every woman that's ever had any significant emotional impact in my life. The word girlfriend is very loose. It's the first girl I remember chasing on the playground in preschool through a girl I thought I was going to marry a couple years ago. So it's really a memoir contextualized in relationship stories.
It's an interesting way to approach it. as well by writing these letters. It gives it sort of a framing, not a framing device, but a consistency. So it's not just, you know, there's more stories about my love life.
Yeah, well, I actually did, this book was born out of a sit and spin piece.
Yeah.
And, which I read, I did five very short little apologies to five different women, and I had a lot of women, and the first four are really funny.
Yeah.
And they're all honest, but the last one, there's not a lot of humor, and it's a very, very earnest apology for something that went down that was, I was just in over my head, and the bullshit excuses I gave her for why it didn't work out weren't true, so I was coming clean with that. And I had a lot of women say, I love that thing. And then somebody else who mentors writers said, do you have enough stories for a book? And I was like, yes, I do.
I have a lot of
ex-girlfriends.
Do you use real names?
No, I've changed everybody's names, and you have to change, like, blue hair to or blue hair.
That's how
I like to date, the blue hairs. You have to change eye color. Basically, nobody in public can recognize the person from the story is basically
okay.
That's how I paraphrase the law.
So I've gotten burned with this before. I'm still waiting for History of the World Part 2. So is there a Volume 2 in the works? Or?
Oh, dude, I hope not. There's a I don't want to call it a twist at the end. There's a reveal at the very end of this book that I think actually, and I can't say it, but it's a very zeitgeisty, hot topic that's flying around. There's a couple
twerking.
Couple movies about it. No twerking. But so there's a cool twist at the end, so I think it can actually, at the risk of sounding super cheesy, change some people's lives.
Oh.
Ah, well, if you want your lives
changed.
Yeah.
So now, where are we at with the... I know there's some things we can't necessarily talk about. Where are we at with the book that where people will be able to...
The book, I have a kick-ass agent who is sending... It's literally in publishers' inboxes now, so we're waiting. Apparently that process is really slow.
Just like everything.
Oh, man. Which I understand. People don't want to read an entire book. And then I was lucky enough to get the manuscript pre-publishing optioned by a production company, so we're going to make it a half-hour television show.
That's excellent.
Good. So I'm pretty psyched, yeah.
And that's not, honestly, that's a great title for a show, too.
Yeah.
I could totally see that coming down. So, before we move on,
yes.
If people want to be able to hear My Sexual Bell Curve or get all the updates on An Open Apology to All My Ex-Girlfriends, Volume 1, where can they find information on you?
Two places. One, I started a website called anopenapology.com, which was inspired by the book, and that's where anyone in the world can come write an apology to anyone else they want in the world.
Oh, that's cool.
And they can do it anonymously or not. And I've gotten some unbelievable apologies from people. That are posted up there fairly regularly. And there's a place where you can get on the email list for when the book is coming out that I'll let you know. And then the same on my website, sterlinggardner.com.
Perfect.
And if you are a good listener of the podcast, you have already been to these sites because we will have them up on our Facebook page. You have probably already, and believe me, I know our listeners have a lot to apologize for, so I am sure that they will be writing in to open apology.
Can I tell you the most shocking apology?
Please do.
A rabbi's mistress apologizing to his wife right before the high holy days for the atonement. What is it, the atonement?
Day of Atonement, yeah.
Day
oh, that's
atonement.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know if that fully counts, but whatever.
And it got picked up by a lot of Jewish blogs and stuff. But yeah, it was pretty, like she really went into some specifics.
But the real question is she gelling?
She's mad as Helen, I know that.
So, the Emmys happened. Did you watch the Emmys? You watched...
I saw most of them.
Now, there are two...
Just
two
sighs right off the bat. Just heavy sighs.
I'm just going to sigh for the next 22 minutes.
I'm one of those people who kind of enjoys award shows.
Me too. I like the pomp and circumstance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm all
spectacle.
In.
Yeah.
Now, Sean, there are two approaches we can take, and I'll let you choose. Do we want to talk about winners and losers first, or do we want to talk about the actual production of the show? Because I have lots to say on both. Which one do you want to go with first?
I say let's talk about the actual production of the show, because winners and losers, I think, is a little bit more of a quicker.
Well, the actual show, I felt, and yes. I don't know how you're going to feel, Sterling, but I thought it was dour and obsessed with death. There was death all around the show. Not only did they have the In Memoriam, they had five standout tributes to dead people. Then they also did some weird thing about the Kennedy assassination.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, I know this doesn't have to do with that, but then one of the winners was someone who had died too. And one of the writers from Homeland, and his wife came out. It just felt like a very...
It was a very dead year.
Well, television is dead.
I just said.
It's very metatextual. I thought the show, but then, here's the weird part, between these bursts of death were these overly produced musical numbers, and Elton John singing songs to Liberace because the kids because the kids love Liberace and Elton John, and then choreography demonstrations where they had Breaking Bad dancers and American Horror Story dancers, and the show was schizophrenic. That's what it was. It wasn't just the death hanging over it. It was the complete and jarring tonal shifts.
Yeah.
A good example of this is the final award was given out by Will Ferrell. He gave out Best Comedy, Best
Drama. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Came out with a very funny bit where he was in his shorts and a t-shirt and flip-flops and his kids in their pajamas. Like, they called me 45 minutes ago. Couldn't get a sitter. There was a nut allergy issue. That would have been fine if he had presented the Best Comedy, but then he proceeded to present Best Drama as well, which
I think at that point they wanted to move it on. But that was, I think, the funniest thing
in the show. I wouldn't say he saved the show, but he at least breathed breath of fresh air into it.
What did you think of all these In Memoriams, all these little... Because, I mean, I don't know. I mean, should... I'll run this by him, because Jack Klugman's son complained. Now, Jack Klugman, very important to television. I mean, Odd Couple, Quincy... I mean, he's
three-time winner. Was he president of the Television Academy or something?
Yeah, he was definitely a three-time winner. And... You know, his son basically said, hey, why does Corey Monteith, who really only did Glee, why does he get to stand up tribute and my father doesn't? I don't think he was saying my father necessarily deserves a stand up tribute, but it's like, how did you choose this? I mean, what, are the kids going to flock to see a In Memoriam? Like, so, I mean, what do you think about having all those individual In Memoriams?
I was just, I read that article about, what's his son's name?
I think Alex.
And and the only thing I could come up with was, and God, everybody hates this so much, but it's like they're marketing these shows to the fucking kids.
They got good ratings.
And the kids want to see. Kids don't even know who Jack Klugman is.
No, I barely. When his name came up today, I was like, Jack Klugman. Oh, right. It even took me a minute to figure out who the hell is he talking about. Oh,
and
that
everybody
guy.
Knows who Corey Monteith is. I'm not saying that makes it more right that he had this, extended segment or whatever, but. It's just, here's what it is. They marketed death to the fucking demo that they needed to market death to.
The young demo.
Yes,
the young the YDD.
Yeah.
Demographic? No, that didn't work.
You said that with Klugman. Like, who knows who? Well, who the hell knows who Jonathan Winters is? I mean, I do.
He's a Smurf. It's Papa Smurf.
But
you know what I thought was weird, by the way, is in these In Memoriams, they didn't show any clips of the dead people. I would have liked to see 12 seconds of something? Come on.
Albert Brooks had, like, a great tweet when it's like, when I die, just play a clip and be done with it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want anyone talking about it. I don't want... The only one that I kind of understood was Gandolfini, because I think he fits the sweet spot of died too soon, was not only iconic, but recently iconic, Emmy darling,
But here's the other thing. For example, what's her name from All in the Family?
Jean Stapleton.
Jean Stapleton. She was in her 90s. Come on. Full life. Accomplished. Do we really need Rob Reiner up there? Going back to Gandolfini, you're right. Died too soon. Had been feted. Probably they could have... Jonathan Winters died in his late 80s. Full life.
We saw Jonathan Winters coming. His death.
Yeah, I
saw a lot of these birth dates were in the 1920s. Okay, this didn't shock anyone. I think, if they'd only done... I would have almost preferred they just have done one for Gandolfini.
I prefer if they just do them like they usually do, which is, this is the In Memoriam segment.
We're going to play some Bach cello and
they
you're gonna
show
clap.
Everyone that's passed away, and then we move on. That's what.
Honestly, that's the way it should be put. Everyone's dead. They're all on equal footing now.
Well, I heard an interesting thing. Is one thing that the show was not about at all was television. They seemed the show was not about TV. It was about Liberace and music and choreography and
my biggest
and Broadway and dance numbers.
That's my biggest complaint, because you bring Elton John out there to sing some brand new song.
No new shit.
This has nothing to do with television. Then you have Carrie Underwood singing a Beatles song.
I like how they were commemorating the Beatles being on the Ed Sullivan Show in 1963 by having her sing a song of the Beatles from 1965.
It doesn't make any sense. I'd rather them show the Beatles on Ed Sullivan. Because then that's really about TV, and it's the fucking Beatles. And you said the dance thing. This is what drove me crazy. So then they do this long interpretive dance, like people doing dubstep to Breaking Bad. Like, I mean, that has nothing to do with anything. And I feel like they are rushing the people speaking to get to Breaking Bad dance routine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's what bothers me. I mean, you heard the music on almost everybody. Jeff Daniels, I'll get into that. I don't think he should have won later, but, you know, he wins. He's a terrific actor, been around forever, never really has won a big award. He's up there. They start playing the music. I mean, give the man a little bit more time. I'd rather see what he has to say, which is why I'm watching, than see a mix of, like, Luck Be a Lady set to the Game of Thrones theme and a dancer theme.
Well, the whole thing was just horribly overproduced.
I love the ongoing prop, poor Bob Newhart. They're dragging his ass out for every little sketch, and he just stood there looking like a befuddled crypt keeper for half the show. You know, the Grammys is basically a long concert with awards.
As
the Tonys, you get to see parts of these Broadway musicals. Bill Simmons today on his podcast, he was at the Emmys. He said during the commercial breaks, they were showing clips of earlier Emmy broadcasts, and he goes, it was astounding to see who was getting awards, who was winning, what was important. He goes, I would have rather had seen clips from TV and TV shows than whatever the fuck they were putting up there. They're making about television, is all I'm saying.
That's the big problem. You're right. Like, I mean, nobody, when you think of great award show moments, you remember a good speech, a surprise winner, and maybe a comical bit. We're talking at least the Oscars and the Emmys or the Golden Globes. You don't remember these, I don't remember Hollywood salute to an editing through interpretive dance at the Oscars. I mean, you don't remember that. You remember something. How do you think Neil Patrick Harris did?
I love him. So just on likability factor alone. 10.
Yeah, he's charming
as hell. But he was given a really fucking Titanic-like event to try to maneuver.
Yeah, Sean said, it was so schizophrenic.
I don't envy his position, but I love him.
The monologue was very anemic.
The monologue was weird, and I don't... I mean, I like him, too. I mean, he's so charming, and he's so talented. But what's funny about it is, in that monologue, they progressively brought out people who were funnier and are probably just more now. I mean, Jimmy Kimmel comes in, and Jimmy Fallon, then Conan O'Brien, who I just laugh looking at Conan O'Brien. I think he's great. And then you end the monologue with Tina Fey and Amy Poehler, who could be the two funniest people on the planet right now. So it's like, so I don't think that necessarily, I think it saved the opening, but it didn't necessarily make NPH look better.
No, it didn't. No. It just showed them, you know, in comparison, hey, here are funnier people that have done it in the past. But whatever, he did as good of a job as possible, man.
Yeah.
And he's crushed the Tonys. I don't know if you guys have seen that.
Also, he crushed the musical number. I mean, he's so good at that. The middle of the show musical number with Sarah Silverman and fat Nathan Fillion.
Except for the fact that I could have done without it.
Did you say fat Nathan Fillion?
Yeah.
Is he that fat?
I'd say bloated.
Well, yeah, you know. Firefly was a long time ago.
I couldn't get through it. I watched it two nights ago.
Really?
I finally thumbed through it on Netflix, and I was like, I don't get it.
It's a fun show. Yeah. I like it, but I don't necessarily buy into the cult of it like some people I know.
Yeah, it's super culty.
Okay, now let's get to the winners. I'm going to start with let's start with the big ones. Thank God Breaking Bad won.
Yes.
This is the best show on television as far as I'm concerned. It And we had talked about this in our Emmy episode. I thought they were going to give it to them because they want them to go out on top. I mean, I know they have one more season that they're eligible for.
Which is even better than the one they won the award for.
Yep.
But right now, it's such a culture. I mean, everyone in the world is talking about it. And I was also delighted to see Anna Gunn win for Breaking Bad because she's been killing it on that show.
In a thankless, in many ways, a thankless role.
Well, people hate her, and I always like people like are always like, oh, Skyler, why? She's married to a criminal. I mean, what do they want her to do? Of course, she should be a little questioning of everything.
Yeah. Well, there was, I don't know if it was on purpose, but there was expert timing on putting out the last half of the season right before the Emmys.
Yeah,
it's on everybody's brain. Everybody that's voting is like, I can't fucking wait to see what's happening. So it's like ideal for that. Not saying they didn't deserve it, but those two things together, the quality plus the timing, was unbeatable.
Now I wonder if it'll penalize them next year when there is no more Breaking Bad and it's not on the voters' minds.
I'm sure it'll affect it.
I'm sure.
Don't be shocked now that they're splitting Mad Men up into two seasons that AMC doesn't try what you're saying to do. Because Mad Men, I mean, although that's one, I think, what, three or four Emmys. I think it's four. None of the actors have ever won, which is kind of disgraceful.
No one on that show?
No actor on Mad Men has ever won an Emmy.
Wow.
But you know who did win? Beating both Bryan Cranston, Kevin Spacey, and John Hamm was Jeff Daniels. Now, Jeff Daniels is a good actor.
You know, Will, America's not great, but it can be.
Do you watch Newsroom?
I watched the pilot.
There you go.
I stuck with it, and it is, and we've talked about this on the show before, I hate watch it. Sean just hates it.
I just don't watch it.
I hate it, too.
I hate watch it. It is such a problematic show, but there's always enough to get me sucked in, and I guess, you know, Sunday nights, I got nothing going on, so I end up watching Newsroom. I like Jeff Daniels. I know you like Jeff Daniels, Sean.
Yeah.
He did not deserve to win this award. I mean,
that is a weird one, right?
The only thing I could think of is there was a lot of splitting of the...
Well, the episode that he submitted was the pilot where he gives that great speech. If you want to look at the Emmy voters as being a little older, a little stodgier, they like that sort of thing. The Mad Men episode they submitted for John Hamm was the one where he gives the Hershey speech, which is creepy. It's amazing, but it's creepy and weird and depressing. Cranston, maybe they felt like they'd given it to him enough times, and he's got another season that they can give it to him for. I don't know. It was inexplicable, and he was chewing gum the entire time while he was up there.
Weird.
And I love the fact that he jetted from that night, last night, he took a plane right to the set of Dumb and Dumber 2, and today he posted a photo of him and Jim Carrey in costume. So I'm very excited for that.
It's so weird.
I give him props for that.
Yeah.
It's so weird that now he's going back into that character.
I love Jeff Daniels as a person, as an actor. I got no problems with him, and you know what? And I don't begrudge him the award, but come on.
I know.
Yeah.
I guess I shouldn't have been, but, you know, Kerry Washington didn't win. Instead, they gave it to a boring white girl, Claire Danes.
Again.
Again, she's a terrific actress, but I actually kind of thought that Kerry Washington was going to win.
I don't think
that.
They gave it to anyone black last night.
They never give it to anyone black.
Well, Bobby Cannavale, sort of. No, I'm kidding.
He's very, yeah. Well, Bobby Cannavale, although I would have given it to Jonathan Banks for Breaking Bad if I had a vote, but Cannavale, he killed it as Chip Rossetti on
It was a big, just a big, bold, balls-to-wall. Did you watch Boardwalk Empire?
Not since the first season.
Okay, it's a show that's gotten progressively better with each successive season.
That's what everyone says.
And season 3 was... The way to approach Boardwalk Empire very quickly is you have to take the whole season as one chunk because they will take their fucking time. They will put stuff in there. You go, why is this here? Why is this here? And they just pull it all. All the threads come together at the end. You just have to have the patience. But he was the bad guy for season 3, and he was just out of his mind the whole season. It's a great performance, but compared to someone like Jonathan Banks,
which is more subtle
and understated, yeah, you couldn't have compared two more. Different performances.
I mean, he even said, Cannavale even said, like, he's getting choked and hitting people with wrenches. And I mean, it's a crazy performance, but it's good. I can't fault that one. What else do you have?
Meredith Weaver.
Well, Merritt Weaver, who I actually like as an actor. Do you watch Nurse Jackie?
No.
Neither do I.
Yeah. I haven't seen it.
But I've been told it's not necessarily a comedy.
It is not a comedy. I love Edie Falco, but it doesn't. The concept doesn't really.
But I gotta admit, I loved Merritt Weaver's speech, which was basically she got up there and was like, "I gotta go, bye." And
was it nerves? You think?
Yeah, She said backstage she didn't expect to win. She had nothing prepared. Her mind just blinked out.
Oh,
she didn't think at all in a million years that she would win, and so she just freaked out. And I love that that was the first win of the night. were the Deschanel sisters stoned? Zoe Deschanel definitely was. Something was going on with those two. They were acting weird up on stage there.
They're a little kooky to begin with.
But this was exceptionally kooky. I wouldn't be shocked.
Was it James Franco high during the Oscars?
It wasn't that bad.
Wasn't that high?
Do you watch The Big Bang Theory?
This one.
I've seen maybe 15 episodes.
Okay.
In its lifetime.
Is that because you don't have the time or you don't like it? I don't like it, by the way.
I know and like Galecki a lot.
Okay.
So I've tuned in to watch him and in some weird way feel supportive, but I don't like it enough that I DVR it, let's say that.
Yeah.
It's not appointment television for you?
It's not. No, it's not.
Well, Jim Parsons won again, which...
That just needs to end, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually watched a few episodes after the first time he won because I was like, well, maybe I'm missing something. And I was like, what am I missing? And then he won again, so I watched a few more, and I'm like,
It's one note.
He's not bad by any means, but to continuously win for comedy?
And how does, like, a Louis C.K. not win?
It's so strange. It's really strange.
It's like
does anybody have theories on that, by the way?
It does really good numbers. It's a safe show,
sure.
I guess. I mean, maybe that appeals to, like, Sean, you mentioned older people.
Yeah, but it's weird that they would nominate things like Louis and Girls and stuff, and then they give the awards to, you know.
But then, you know what? Julia Louis-Dreyfus is on a show where she's saying fuck every 10 minutes, and she wins, and she's fucking brilliant.
But they love her. That bit, by the way, first of all, good on Tony Hale. Glad he won.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Her bit with him coming up on stage and whispering, ma'am, your family. I'd like to thank my family.
That's really funny.
Very funny, very well thought out.
Someone...
arguably the best bit of the show.
Yeah. And somebody tweeted, I forget who it was, maybe it was Janelle Riley or somebody, but somebody tweeted that Julia Louis-Dreyfus is so prepared to win these awards that now she just uses her speech to test out bits.
Yeah.
I kind of respect that. That's pretty cool.
And it's also kind of cocky and arrogant in a way.
Yeah, like, for sure.
I kind of know I'm going to win, so let's get some shtick going.
But you know what?
I love it.
I love her. I can't begrudge her winning. She totally deserves it, but I'm still pulling for Amy Poehler to win an award.
Who is she up against?
Amy Poehler.
Tina Fey.
Tina Fey.
Lena Dunham?
Lena Dunham?
Yeah.
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 I mean, look, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus winning is very deserved, but I think Amy Poehler equally deserved.
And she won't be eligible next year, right? Because that show is part
of
the
show. No, Parks and Rec's got it.
It'll be good
next
year.
Oh, yeah.
But Julia Louis-Dreyfus will probably beat her again.
With a better bit.
And real quick, because we're going to have to move on in a second. Modern Family won again.
I feel the same way about that show as I do about Jim Parsons. Just like, can we spread the wealth a little bit?
Yeah.
Not that Modern Family's not awesome.
Yeah, it's a great show.
But the thing that I read today about that was it just feels like it deserved the previous few years because that was sort of when it was peaking, and now it's still great, but there's some other shows that now deserve to wedge that out of the best.
Exactly. I mean, I don't see an end to being out from under this Modern Family tyranny.
This tyranny of Manny. The one thing I want to point out also is the sea change of the Colbert Report finally beating out The Daily Show after 10 years.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Both writing and best comedy variety. And I have to say, as someone who watches both shows nightly, while I love Jon Stewart, I love The Daily Show, Colbert Report is just light years ahead of him in the satire and what they're doing.
Yeah.
And,
well, they're hitting their stride, man.
Yeah, it's just a far more interesting show, you know.
Well, Daily Show hit its stride.
Yeah.
And now Colbert is hitting.
And now Colbert will win for 10 years.
And good on him. And you know what? If these shows run for another 20 years, they're going to be the new Johnny Carson of our. You know, everyone's obsessed over the Tonight Show. Now it's
The big thing will be one day when Stewart stops doing the Daily Show.
But you know,
show
they had John Oliver take over the summer, and the show kept its ratings. And you could see there was something slightly different about it. It wasn't John Stewart's energy, but the show didn't feel. It still had its point of view, and it still had its tone, and it still worked. And that, you know. Bodes well for the future of The Daily Show.
I want to go in a complete different direction for a second here. Are you a baseball fan?
I am a fan.
I'm a huge Yankees fan, you know, being from New York.
All right.
It's not just being a front runner.
I grew up with the O's, but that's okay.
I was born and raised Yankees.
Fair enough.
Mariano Rivera is retiring this weekend. Greatest closer.
Explain for some of our listeners what a closer is.
Well, if they don't know.
Because it's not Kira Sedgwick.
No, it's she's the second greatest closer of all time. Basically, at the end of the game, in a close game, they bring in a pitcher to basically close the door, secure the win, and Mariano Rivera has been the greatest of these, not just because he has the most saves career-wise, but he's done so many in an age where they bring out people just to pitch one inning. He has so many multi-inning saves. The most postseason saves. He has 42 postseason saves, which matches his uniform number.
Quick question, you would know way better than I. Are you calling him the greatest closer, or is he well known as the greatest closer?
He is well known as the greatest closer.
Okay.
I know as a Yankee fan it sounds self-serving.
That's what I'm saying, I'm wondering.
I guess somebody, I'm sure there's an Oakland A's fan, will argue like, Eckersley was great and here were reasons, or somebody else, but I mean, if you look at the numbers, you look how long he's done it. If you look at a lot of these other people, they do it for maybe 8 years if they're really good, like someone like Eckersley. Most of them are really good for just a short amount of time, and then they kind of just hang around. Mariano hasn't lost a step. He's been pitching since 95.
Somebody blew out his Achilles.
Well, last year he got hurt, but he's been closing since 97, and now we're in 2013, and he's still got a minuscule ERA. He's still closing games. I mean, he could go another season, but he chose to retire, and the Yankees sent him off in a really spectacular fashion this past Sunday. They retired his number, which is already retired by baseball because he shares a number with Jackie Robinson. He was kind of grandfathered into keeping it. And Jackie Robinson's family was there when they retired that number. All the old teammates from all his championship teams were there. They gave him tons of gifts. And also, in very cool fashion, his theme song when he comes out to pitch is Enter Sandman. Metallica came and they played out there on the field during the end. They played Enter Sandman.
Well done, Yankees.
Yeah, classy
well
way.
Done.
Now
well
here's the done. Dick here's the dick move when he announces he's home for the summer, realizes I don't like my family, and he's unretires next season and comes back. Does he have to give the gifts back? What's
no,
the rule?
Mariano will stay retired.
Not giving the rocking chair back?
He's that kind of a player. He will stay retired. He's always been a very classy player. Always been kind of a in a day where we got all these athletes who are in everyone's face, he's always been very kind of a just a quiet
super
guy.
Super low-key.
Yeah, goes about his business. And also in an age where everyone's on HGH and all these selfish players, he's also someone who's just been solid.
He's the essence of the purity of baseball.
He's a mensch.
Yes.
He's a mensch. It's
yes.
Too bad Yankees won't be seeing the postseason this year.
Too bad about that.
That's what could have been better. Could have been sweeter.
Can you give me a two sentence explanation of what qualities in a pitcher specifically make him a closer? I know what a closer does, but if he's that good at closing, why doesn't he start or relieve?
Well, stamina might be one reason.
Okay.
That he doesn't have the stamina to go more, or his you know what's funny about Mariano? And this probably would have affected him more as a starter. He basically only has one pitch. He basically just has a cutter. And what's been unbelievable is everyone knows what's coming. And the pitch is so good. He's so good at throwing it. They just can't hit it. But I'd imagine if he was starting that eventually they might get a handle on
it. Okay.
Right. Or he'd have to he'd probably develop more pitches, but they wouldn't be
good at one thing, basically, and he does it better than anyone else.
Better than anyone else. And he will be in the Hall of Fame 5 years
I respect
from now.
That.
Yeah.
So, you mentioned before Alex Stein's book release party.
September 29th.
September 29th.
Will you be there?
I will not.
Why won't you be there?
Well, here's the thing. September 29th, I have a very good friend. His name is Freddie Boutros. He's a friend of the podcast,
been
a loyal listener. He came on the show once, helped us with our little summer movie preview. Nicest guy you're ever going to meet. And he's always, here's the thing, like the Friends song, he is someone who's always there for you. You need a ride somewhere, you need...
Well, that's a really well-placed callback.
Yeah, oh, well, thank you. He, that's the theme here.
Well done.
But, you know...
We're gelling.
one of the best friends. Now, as loyal listeners to the show know, if there's one thing I care about more than my friends, it's the television program Breaking Bad. I'm obsessed. And as the show has gone on, I have become more and more obsessed. Because we're getting here. We're getting here till the end. And Freddie, since his birthday is the 29th, and a lot of Sunday nights, us as a group of friends, we hang out at this bar, Sardo's. Mm-hmm. He said, well, hey, guys, here's an invite I'm sending out. I'm having my birthday party, 9 o'clock on Sunday night, September 29th. Well, you know what, Freddie? That's the exact time that the final episode of Breaking Bad starts. Now, this isn't a season finale where maybe I could get away with DVR. This isn't the penultimate episode. This is the final episode of a show that I've been watching since the day it came on air. I wasn't one of these Johnny-come-latelys who started, but I watched this from the day it came on air. I have watched this show religiously. And everybody, it's a cultural event. The world is going to gather around it, and you think you're bigger than this? You think you're bigger than Breaking Bad? That you're going to have a birthday party and expect us to show up? And that is why, Freddie Boutros, you are the enemy of the podcast. I love you, but fuck you. And you want to know why? Because now I feel guilty. Now I feel guilty that I'm missing one of my best friend's birthday parties to watch a TV program. But you want to know what? I'm doing it anyway.
He could have had the greatest birthday party ever if he moved it to 8:30 and did a Breaking Bad birthday party.
Nah, because people don't want to watch. You got to watch it either by yourself or with a small group. You know, this isn't a group event.
Too many people coming?
To his birthday party?
I went to the season opener this year with, there was probably like 15 people there. And they were literally dressed up like characters. I was like, wow, this is crazy.
But were any of those people who were like, what do you think's going to happen here in the middle of a scene? Like, were there those people who talk?
No, there were...
run that risk.
You run that risk. They did do a multiple choice quiz with prizes before. Like, it was intense. I wasn't expecting
that. I will be watching with three friends. We'll be getting together early. We're going to rewatch the pilot. We're going to be having
The pilot.
We're going to be eating Heisenbergers. Rice and bowls, and my friend who's a mixologist is coming up with a crystal blue ice
theme
drink. And then they got DirecTV, so we got the 6 p.m. East Coast feed. And it's four of us. We're going to watch it. By 7:30, we'll be good.
Well done, man.
So you could go to Freddie's birthday then, because you'll be done at 7:30.
I don't know.
You're going to rewatch it at 9, right?
I'm going to be emotional. I'm coming to your house, and all these people will be drug assholes. You want Heisenbergers?
It's, you know what? Here's the thing that I feel bad about. And Freddie, if you're listening, it was a non-choice. There was no way I was going to. You should be honored that I've even though racked my brain. We're going out to dinner with him a few nights before to celebrate with him because we do feel some guilt. But you know, I did this once before. I had a friend, Brian Swanson, and his girlfriend wanted to throw a big birthday party, and I was having coffee with him. She's telling me details about it. I said, "Oh, this sounds great." I said, when is it? She gave me the date, and I'm like, no, I won't be there. And she's like, why not? And I go, oh, it's the final episode of Lost. And she goes, well, can't you just...
No, the answer is
no.
And
I go, no. And here's why. And I proceeded to talk to her for an hour about what the program Lost meant to me and how much I've dissected it with my friends and how amongst my friends I was kind of the Lost expert and they'd call me after episodes because I'd be the guy who remembers, well, do you remember in season 2, episode 8, blah, blah, blah. And by the time I was done, she was like, yeah, you can't come to his birthday party. If I went, I wouldn't be enjoying myself.
Yep.
And that's the same thing with Freddie. Here's the thing.
You're being true to yourself.
In reality, when Breaking Bad is over, I'll probably sit there stunned for a few minutes, and then I'll get in my car and I'll go. And I'll
so essentially, you're going to be there an hour and a half late.
Essentially.
It's not like you're not going to the party. You're just going to be there a little fucking later.
But he's lucky. If this was a lesser friend, I would probably skip the whole
thing.
Well,
I was going to say, there's going to be some serious digestion time.
Yeah, there's
going to
be some Seppin Wall time I'm going to need.
I'm willing to hold off watching Talking Bad till the next day.
Hardwick can wait.
Yeah, but there's something about, like, planning things, or like, there's always that, probably that poor asshole who decided to, oh, my wedding's on Super Bowl Sunday.
Yeah.
I don't know why the hall was so cheap.
Yeah.
What do you think about that? I mean, if you plan a big event, do you think culturally, like, what's going on this day first?
Depends on how far out. Like, if you're using that wedding example, like, people do that shit a year out, and you're just, and then the Breaking Bad season finale schedule comes out, and you're like, no!
That's,
I mean, that
true.
Would suck
I
so hard if you
card.
Were the groom, and your wife was like, I think Sunday the 29th. That sounds great.
Yeah,
it'll
perfect.
Be cool.
Book
it's
it.
September. We'll get people out there. No one comes.
My father's side of the family doesn't plan weddings in the month of October just in case the Yankees are in the playoffs.
Well done.
I got the story to end all stories. Ex-girlfriend of mine, who's Mexican, like, and her family is very Mexican, married a boy who's from Australia, very Australian, so it's an international wedding. People flying in from all over the world to Manhattan for this massive, beautiful wedding. Day of the wedding, fucking World Cup. Happens once every 4 years.
Wow.
Date is known way in advance. It's the goddamn World
and
Cup.
And these are people, like you said, international, who would care more
yeah,
than
that. Yeah, it's not they're not U.S.
Right.
Yeah, wow.
The wedding started at 5 o'clock.
Oh, dude.
The game was at noon, East Coast time. But I feel bad, so I was able to wake up, watch the game, went to a bar, got drunk, went to the wedding, got drunk, fine. I feel bad for all the fucking family that had to be there for hair and makeup and fucking pictures at 2 o'clock when the goddamn World Cup, and it was Italy versus France, you know, World Cup, come on.
If this were a wedding on the Breaking Bad thing, I would seriously, I mean, I would certainly leave early. Let's put it that way.
I was at a wedding in Los Angeles, and it was during the Lakers finals. And it was like, it was the final game of the finals when the Lakers won their Kobe's fourth ring. And nobody was on the dance floor. Nobody was at the wedding. They were all in the bar watching the Lakers win the finals.
That's such a bummer, dude. But sometimes you don't know.
You don't know
that the Lakers are going to win in five.
But you know what? Like I said, I have a big Yankee. I had to go to a big Yankee playoff game. I had to go to a wedding out here. But I can't begrudge the people who lived out here and threw it. And I didn't make a fuss, obviously. I went to the wedding, and I occasionally checked my phone to see a score of the game.
Yep.
Because they shouldn't plan for that. I think you have to think about who your guests are, and if you're planning a wedding in Los Angeles and you have lots of LA Laker fan friends, and the Lakers are always in the playoffs, you gotta think about things like this.
How many women are gonna put that much forethought into it, though?
That's why men should plan everything.
April's a good month to do things.
April is the cruelest month.
It's a good month because, you know, you're not in playoffs for any sports. You know, you're not, TV seasons aren't ending. There's very few cultural events.
Passover.
Okay.
Easter. Something Muslim.
Muslim. Well, you've given me a good transition to end on here. I always like to throw in a weird story right at the end. And there was a study in Austria that apparently the water in which the springs in which they get their holy water has been tested, and apparently the holy water contains 62 million bacteria per millimeter.
Milliliter.
Would you know what the normal rate, like what that...
I don't know, but...
Too much.
That sounds like a lot.
Too much.
And
too much probiotics.
86% of samples tested contain dangerous levels of bacteria commonly found in fecal matter, such as E. coli. So here's my thing.
Holy shit is the answer.
Oh.
Why can't the priests just use like a bottle of Poland Spring? Arrowhead.
For those of you on the West Coast, Poland Spring is a popular brand of bottled water not sold on the West,
Coast. The equivalent of
Arrowhead. Yeah.
Why are they using such filthy water? Holy water.
Poop water.
poo water.
And isn't
pee
it,
water.
Can't any? Isn't it just a priest can just bless? Like, can't the priest just bless the tap water?
Before he blessed it, it was 100 million per milliliter.
That's right. He cut it in half, 50% bacteria.
Yeah.
God saved us.
Come on, Pope Francis. You're doing a
lot of
good.
Where is this? Austria?
Austria. So don't baptize a baby in Austria.
It turned out to be Hitler.
How do you drink?
Sewage.
Let me ask you this, darling. Are you one of these people who... Are you one of these people who, like... have, like, a water purification system at home, or always drinking bottled water? Do you just
go
up to the tank?
You know what I just discovered, and I've just been doing it for about 2 months, and I highly recommend it, and I always made fun of it before? Those machines with the 5 gallon jugs?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I fill that thing up. It lasts me a week.
I gotta lift it. I'm weak, though. I can't lift a 5 gallon
it's
jug.
It's not that bad.
You get stronger by doing it.
I would drink my tap water, but it tastes like shit. I grew up drinking tap water in rural Maryland. It tastes delicious, but when I came out here, I was like, you can't drink this tap water.
We had a recent guest on the podcast, Nick Wexler, and I was out to dinner with him and a friend of his, this guy, JR. And we're sitting at the table, and the waitress comes over, do you want anything to drink for now? And I'm like, I'll just have water. And Nick's like, yeah, I'll have water. And the guy goes, do you have any, like, sparkling water or just a bottle of, like, flat water for the table? And she's like, yeah, I'll bring a bottle of flat water for them. And Nick's like, why?
Yeah,
and he
yeah.
goes, well, this is going to give us tap water. This is going to... And Nick's like, who cares? Like, we'll just take the... Well, she ended up... someone else ended up bringing us a glass of water, and then the waitress brought over the bottle of water. And Nick said to his friend, he's like, you won't be able to tell the difference at all. Guarantee you. And Nick did a whole Princess Bride, turned the cups around behind the thing. The guy couldn't see. He got it wrong every time.
Yes, so, but his body wasn't infested with disgusting tap bacteria.
Well, you know what?
Bacteria.
We need a little bit of bacteria to help us.
I'm completely with you. I have no problem drinking tap water. I don't drink the tap water here without Brita-ing it just because the pipes are old.
Yep.
But I got no problem with tap water in general. So, you know.
Well, I'm just saying the priests aren't doing a good job blessing this water. I mean, I guess that's what constitutes holy water, right? You just spirit the son.
Ellen, you raised Catholic.
But I don't believe in God. Anyway.
Everyone's saying the new pope is a kick-ass dude.
Oh, he's an awesome pope.
He's a pretty good pope. He's like, homosexuals, atheists, you're all into heaven.
Yeah.
Come on
yeah,
in.
Yeah, it's pretty tight.
He's a good man. He's
well, they got to do something.
He's Argentinian. That's why. We're good people.
Yeah.
But you're not Argentinian.
My
Catholic.
Mom was born and raised there.
But you're Argentinian Jew.
I don't know. My mother, when they elected an Argentinian pope, my mom's all excited. I'm like, what the fuck? Like,
he's a good pope, and as Bill Maher keeps reminding us, that's why they're probably going to poison him. Sterling.
Is this the Borgias?
Yes, sir.
Thank you so much.
Dude, thank you for having me, guys.
Before we leave, plug away again. Plug all your websites and stuff.
Oh, Lord. And openapology.com. Anyone can write an apology to anyone they want in the world or read other people's apologies. My website is sterlinggardner.com, which is almost finished. I mean, it's functional, but I'm really excited about that. And then I'm trying to get into the Twitter thing, guys. I'm having a hard time, but I'm forcing myself in there because I know it's a necessary evil. At Sterling Gardner.
Okay.
There you go.
Sean,
plug. You can follow me. I am very into the Twitter thing, as anyone who follows me can attest to, at TheSeanDavid. You can also download and buy and read and purchase and give me money for my book, Triumvirs, Triumvirs, Amazon Kindle. I will also be giving a talk, I believe, on October 6th at the Last Bookstore at 1 p.m.
Nice.
On Verdi's last opera, Falstaff, and I will also be giving a talk on October 11th.
For our cultured listeners.
Yes, and I will also be giving a talk on October 11th in the morning at, I believe, Oasis somewhere on Pico, also on Verdi's Falstaff. So there you go.
Go see that. I went
and
to
go to the LA Opera and buy tickets and go see some opera because it's fantastic.
I went to one of your opera things, and look, I don't know anything about opera, but it was fascinating. It was really good. So go to that show. You can follow me at The Real Will Link. You can wait a second. No. This is the part of the show where I usually tell you can listen to me every Tuesday on the PM show with Larry Minetti. Not anymore. I no longer, me and that program have parted ways. But you can still read film reviews of mine at the website U1Can. Can spelled like the city in France. Also, I will be performing October 6th Lit Up Writers.
Nighttime.
Yeah. 7:30 p.m. It's part of the L.A. Story Festival. It's a terrific show. It's at the Lyric Hyperion Theater. So go to this show. I'm going to be reading a wonderful essay. And
we'll be the judges of that.
Yes. And on October 17th, I'm very excited about this. I will be, if I were to believe the emails they've been sending me, I will be performing at Sit and Spin at the Comedy Central stage. And you'll be able to find out information for all of this on our Facebook page. But that's a free show. You just got to call and reserve tickets. So in that one,
Sit and Spin is a great show. Always a good show. A bad Sit and Spin show is still a great show.
I'm very excited to be part of one of these things. So come down and see that. On the show next week, we are shaking things up a bit. We've had a lot of nothing personal stirring. We've had a lot of writers.
Hey,
we've had
man.
A lot of actors. We've had a lot of fellow podcasters. Next week, we're having a dominatrix.
Get out. Who is it?
Mistress Tetra.
Don't know
She works at Sanctuary Studios.
Does good work.
She does good work. She puts on these very interesting parties. She's going to tell us all about that and about how maybe if you want to go down and check out one of these parties, how you could do that.
All right.
And the week after that, we're back to then web series stuff. Ethan Taranto, is that how you say it?
You should have looked it up or asked him.
Ethan Taranto Kent. He is the creator of a post-apocalyptic web series called Mad Nation, which I've seen a lot of the first season. It's really great. Season 2, they've just been raising money for season 2, and they're starting production on that, and he's going to come and get us all excited about it. So looking forward to having him on. Sterling, thank you so much.
Guys, thank you so much.
And for the Will Sean Podcast, I'm Sean Davis.
I'm Will Link.
And we're finished.
We're finished.